This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. Donald Trump on Wednesday signed yet more executive orders, trying to fulfill, at least in name, some of the biggest campaign promises he made to his voters, such as building a wall on the U.S. border with Mexico. He specified, quote, a contiguous physical wall or other similarly secure, contiguous and impassable physical barrier. House Speaker Paul Ryan has estimated that the wall will cost $8 to $12 billion, but the MIT Tech Review puts the figure closer to $40 billion. Trump had promised his supporters that he would get Mexico to pay for the wall, but Mexico's current and former presidents have soundly rejected that. Now, Trump claims U.S. taxpayers will foot the bill initially, but eventually be reimbursed. How exactly that will happen, the president has not specified. Meanwhile, border crossings by immigrants are at a 40-year low. My guest is Laura Carlson. She's the director of the Americas Program at the Center for International Policy. She's also a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. She joins us from Mexico. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let's talk about how the current president, Enrique Peña Nieto, has responded, and also the former president, Vicente Fox. And we should specify, of course, here in the U.S. that these two presidents are not friends of Mexico's progressives. However, of course, they represent this kind of international opposition and disgust with President Trump here in the U.S., right?
Yes, well, ever since this issue came up, which was at the very beginning of Trump's campaign of building a wall along the entire southern border, there was an expression of outrage from Mexico, from the people, from former presidents, almost unanimous here. Nobody's going to be in favor of building that wall. President Fox has been particularly hard-hitting in his tweets. He's also a famous Twitter user. About the outrageousness of building this wall, and made some very strong statements. And Peña Nieto has also been against the wall, obviously, but his position has been much more conciliatory to President Trump and even to candidate Trump. He, of course, invited Trump down to Mexico in the month of August during the campaign, a move that was widely repudiated by the Mexican public and that led to the resignation of his minister of the Treasury.
It now sounds like you have a rooster who's really upset about the wall, too. It sounds like you have a rooster who's really upset about the border wall with Mexico as well. Yeah. Laura Carlson is my guest. She's sitting outdoors joining us from Mexico, hence the sound of the rooster. Now, I understand that that Peña Nieto is, even if he might have been a little bit more conciliatory to Trump than we might imagine, he has suggested that he might cancel his upcoming meeting with Trump. That's a pretty serious diplomatic insult.
Well, talking about diplomatic insults, the day that his Minister of Foreign Relations, the same man who was fired after inviting Trump down, virtually fired, after inviting Trump down for the visit in August as a candidate, arrived in Mexico to begin talking about issues so important in the binational relationship as the renegotiation of NAFTA and the building of wall. That very same day, yesterday, was the day that they signed the executive decree calling for the wall and a whole series of other measures that are very anti-Mexico. So it was a real slap in the face. Diplomatically, you just don't do that. And with this entire population in Mexico against the idea of the Peña Nieto administration trying to cozy up to Trump, a world leader who has openly maligned them, who has openly insulted them, that became a huge political cost again. And he didn't want to relive what happened when he invited candidate Trump down in August. So it looks like he will cancel his visit. Trump, I've heard, has spun it to say, well, if he is against the wall, I don't want to talk to him anyway. But there's really not much room for negotiation there. It's been very clear, especially with the signing of those executive decrees, that what Donald Trump is saying, we don't care what happens in Mexico, and we don't care about Mexico, which is a major, you know, trade partner and, of course, closest neighbor. We don't care what Mexico thinks about it. This is what's coming down. In that context, to retain the dignity of your country and as also a world leader, the only thing you can do is begin to take measures in defense and respond in kind.
Right. I mean, when you have one country saying to its neighbor, we're going to build a wall and you're going to pay for it. Now let's sit down and talk diplomacy. It just doesn't work that way. How is the wall being viewed by ordinary Mexicans? I mean, we should also, by the way, mention that there are many hundreds of miles of wall along the 2,000-mile border that have already been built. There was a 2006 law that required a building of a wall along this, at least several hundred miles of a wall. And there are some parts of the border where there's three different fences and barriers.
Mm-hmm. And that experience is important. On the one hand, the wall is symbolic. Yeah. And it's symbolic of the worst things you could possibly want in a binational relationship. What the wall says is that you are the enemy. Mexico is a threat. Mexico is a contaminant. No, and we don't want Mexico in this country. And that's really a very, very insulting statement for two nations, especially that have the degree of integration, not just economic, but cultural, social, binational families. Like the United States and Mexico do. The wall has been also a learning experience because what we found is that, number one, it's always way more expensive than they tell us it will be, and number two, it doesn't work. The technologies that they put into place, the barriers that they put into place, it's not just the fact that there are gaps in the wall that explain why flows of contraband and flows of undocumented migrants are able to go through. It's principally because of the degree of corruption that exists on both sides of the border and the fact that, especially in the case of migrants, when people are desperate, they'll find a way to go through. And this is going to be the case even if they did build the entire wall. Now, you already mentioned some of those estimates for the cost. It could be $10 billion. It could be $40 billion. Imagine what we could do in terms of addressing some of the real reasons why people are forced to leave Mexico and look to sustain their families in the United States if we applied $40 billion to the problems that are at the root of both the migration and the issues of contraband, the issues of drug flows and the rest of it over the southern border. It would be far more effective. And probably Donald Trump knows this, but he was able to use this issue of building a wall with Mexico to convince people in the United States that the United States problems, especially economic problems that affected the middle class and the lower middle class, were really caused by Mexico and Mexicans.
Right. This chant of build the wall was one of his supporters' most popular chants. And it's always, and it's a kind of a hallmark of fascist societies when you scapegoat vulnerable people and, you know, the people themselves doing the scapegoating might be struggling, but it's a convenient scapegoat. And by the way, speaking of the border wall, Native American tribe, the Tohono O'odham Nation, has many miles of their reservation extending into Mexico, and they've said that the 75 miles of border that pass through their nation, they will not allow a border wall, and so that's going to be an interesting legal fight. And of course, it all seems highly symbolic anyway. Whether this wall will really get built is almost besides the point. Also, Laura, I understand that migration from Latin America through Mexico and from Mexico itself is currently at a 40-year low, right?
Yeah, that's been the hallmark of the entire campaign and now even the policies of Donald Trump. They're not based on facts. They're based on manipulating people's images of what the reality is. Not only is it at a 40-year low, we actually have net migrant flow from Mexico from several years back to the United States. What does that mean? It means more people are returning to Mexico than are going to Mexico. Hmm. So the whole idea that there's this flood of migrants going in to steal jobs and to take public resources is completely made up. And anyone who takes 5 minutes to Google the actual statistics about what's happening with migration knows that. There's a greater number of Central American migrants that are coming up, but it's still not huge numbers. And the other part of the myth is that the borders are unprotected. We've seen an increase that's absolutely unprecedented in the history of the United States in terms of what they call border security. And I say that in quote marks because there's nothing about it that makes us more secure. because there's really no threat. If you go and talk, and I have, to NORTHCOM, you know, to the military people, is there a threat of international terrorism coming over the southern border? They will be forced to tell you that there's not one record of international terrorism threat coming over the southern border. So this whole thing is invented. It makes defense companies and certain intelligence companies very wealthy because they're getting these like $10 to $40 billion contracts, construction companies, in order to build the walls and to create the and to do the drone flights and everything. And yet at the same time, U.S. schools are dying. Healthcare is obviously insufficient. You know, communities are struggling just to provide the basics.
Now, Laura, what do you make of Trump's stated desire to renegotiate NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada? It's been argued for years that NAFTA has been one of the major drivers of immigration from Mexico, of undocumented immigration from Mexico to the U.S. because that agreement decimated so many Mexican industries. It's an agreement that has been defended by Mexico's elites, however. And now there's some talk of Mexico itself possibly withdrawing from NAFTA over Trump and his actions. Is NAFTA in trouble? And if so, could that actually be a good thing?
NAFTA's in trouble. He's been very clear that this wasn't an idle threat, that Donald Trump will carry through with the negotiation. And he's also been very clear that he's going to do it his way. There's not really any room there, as far as I can see, for any negotiation. We don't know what his way is exactly, but it obviously will involve protectionist measures. He's got a protectionist in the trade representative and has espoused these views frequently on the campaign trail, and could involve slapping tariffs on goods that are produced in Mexico and then become part of products that are sold on the U.S. market. There's a whole range of other parts of NAFTA that could be renegotiated. Now, grassroots organizations in Mexico have been calling for renegotiation or getting rid of NAFTA since the beginning. But that was at the beginning, and it's not the same thing now. They still believe that NAFTA should be renegotiated, and we're seeing statements from organizations, especially those farm organizations, where we saw 2 million small farmers forced off their land, trying to compete with corporate subsidized products flooding in from the United States. And they're saying, yes, renegotiate NAFTA, but in these terms. And the terms are increase our own domestic market for our goods, get government support for the production of basic foods, because basic foods are strategic to a nation. They're a national security issue for us here in Mexico. Restrict imports that threaten our own ability to produce foods and provide employment for our people in the countryside. However, we know those are not going to be the terms that Donald Trump wants to renegotiate in NAFTA. And if there's an immediate cessation of NAFTA, because the economy has been oriented toward this export platform for the past 20 years and more, there could be an immediate economic crisis within Mexico. It seems that the Trump administration is not looking forward to some of the consequences of its actions in these drastic measures, and it's just looking to continue to send out this punitive message to Mexico that says, you're the root of our problems, and we're going to end it and make America great again.
So, Laura, Mexico has already, of course, been struggling economically, and the streets of Mexico, Mexican cities, have been filled with mass protests that have kind of been eclipsed by the news here in the United States. They're being called the gas price protests. Tell us a little bit about what has prompted these protests. Some of the clashes with police have gotten violent. People have been killed. Tell us a little bit about, give us an update on those protests. What has driven them, and are they still going on?
Yes, they are. And they're very strong, and they're likely to get stronger. A number of factors have come together. So they were triggered by the gas hike, which was up to 20% in some parts of Mexico. That's a huge blow to the pocketbooks of average Mexicans. And then it causes a chain reaction in terms of inflation because transportation is involved in the sale of almost any product. So what we're seeing is a response of people to the higher prices. This began at the beginning of the year when Mexico's economy was already looking to be in trouble. As soon as Trump was elected, the peso began falling, and it had been falling for a while, but it began falling precipitously, and it continues to fall as a result of some of these punitive measures that the United States government is now applying to Mexico and the uncertainty that that has created. With the peso falling, the economy was beginning to look much shakier. And when this came out as a way to save the national budget, because the justification was, well, international prices went up, we're importing a lot of oil, which has always been a big question, why does Mexico import oil, you know? But that's the way the industry has been set up. And so we're just going to have to, and the dollar's stronger, so we're going to have to raise the prices. But what essentially that they're doing is making the Mexican people pay for a hole in the budget that's been caused by economic mismanagement and also by this tremendous pool of corruption where money is siphoned off to try to save the image of a president who now has 12% approval rating.
Wow. You know? I think Donald Trump has something to compete with Enrique Peña Nieto on.
Yeah, he's worse than Trump. Started as the lowest approval rating of, I think, any president in the history, 32, wasn't it? Yeah.
So finally, another thing that has happened between the U.S. and Mexico that has also been eclipsed by the inauguration here and the inauguration protests, anti-inauguration protests, has been the extradition of El Chapo Guzman, the Mexican drug lord who, you know, had been captured twice, escaped twice, and finally back in custody. How politically significant is this extradition? Do you think Trump is going to try to score political points off of this? I mean, of course, we should say the groundwork of all of this was laid under the Obama administration.
Yes, and it's generally speaking a long process. Many people here are saying that the fact that this happened right at the time of the inauguration was kind of a gift from Peña Nieto to Donald Trump because it's something to say, it's kind of a macho thing. You know, we've got Mexico to give us back El Chapo and we're going to prosecute him here, which has been the intention all along. Not give us back, but, you know, they've been requiring that El Chapo be prosecuted in the United States. Exactly what's going to happen with that is a very complicated question, because that means we enter into a situation where it's, first of all, the Mexican government is in a way saying that it cannot be trusted to keep its own prisoners in jail, and El Chapo is the perfect example because he escaped twice already. So it's kind of a strange statement from the Mexican government. And then secondly, in the process of the trial, there's likely to be a lot of give and take. And what that means is that El Chapo will give up certain types of information in order for certain types of leniency. And that really pollutes the whole justice process. They've got the biggest fish in the pool. What they need to do is not only apply an exemplary sentence and legal process, but also begin to pick up even the corrupt politicians, even the people high up. And it's not likely that that will happen because we know that these networks extend into the governments of both countries and include not just organized crime, but government officials themselves.
Right. I mean, the U.S. rarely takes responsibility for any of the problems around the drug war, the causes of it, and the impacts. Laura, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a view from across the border that's so desperately needed here in the U.S.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Laura Carlson is the director of the Americas Program at the Center for International Policy and a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.